Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 202 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC Fight Night 92 went 2-1 to profit 2 units overall. We won our plays on Justin Ledet and Talis Lidis, but lost our play on Horacio Gutierrez. We also lost our one-unit free bet on Honey Jason inside the distance prop. Back to the present, UFC 202 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a middleweight contest between Alberto Uda, who is 9-1, and Marvin Vettori, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Vettori -190, the comeback on Uda +150. Looking over at our sponsored sportsbook right now, it's Vettori -170, the comeback on Uda is still at +150. So line's pretty much staying the same, line margin tightened up a little bit. And there is two-way action coming into this fight. A lot of split opinions out there as well. Now, this should be a pretty good fight because both these guys in some way are similar. I mean, they're both well-rounded strikers that have some grounds going along with it and are capable of finishing the fight by KO or by submission. So this should be a pretty exciting fight, and both these guys do like to finish. Now, I'll start off with Vettori first. I mean, he's the hyped prospect making his UFC debut. He is the Venator FC middleweight champion. It's an organization that's pretty solid, getting some pub now, outside of the UFC. It's a European organization, and they definitely try to get some talent on the roster. So it's not exactly an easy organization to get wins in, but at the same time, it is still outside of the UFC, and it's definitely the competition level at times can be a little suspect. But that being said, at age 22 for Vettori, he's definitely a very solid fighter. He's coming off of actually a sub win over a UFC vet as well. So he's somebody to look out for, especially at age 22. You know, he's going to keep on improving and he's going to get better and better, but he still is a bit raw. I mean, he's overall, he's more of a striking base fighter. He's strong, athletic, a pretty complete fighter, but he does have his issues. He's still a little bit raw. He makes technical mistakes along the way. I'll start off with the striking though. He is a southpaw on the feet. Offensively, he does put a lot of power in with everything he throws, whether it's his kicks, whether it's his hands. I mean, it's pretty fun to watch this guy strike because he goes out there with the intent to definitely finish a fight. His clinch game is really strong as well. I like to watch his knee attack work. I mean, he definitely does some damage along the way there. And then he's also capable of taking the fight to the floor, use it a little bit of wrestling, and also his submission game is pretty solid. He definitely goes for the sub, and he's capable of hitting guillotine chokes. He's capable of hitting stuff from the top as well. So Vettori is a pretty complete prospect that's getting better. But what I was talking about with he's still being a little bit raw, he does make those technical mistakes. I mean, he's the type of fighter sometimes that will kind of look for a takedown or accidentally pulls the fighter on top of them to mount. I mean, you look at some of the footage in the past with this guy. He does that type of stuff. So he'll act, he'll basically go to the ground and have somebody get on top and get top position by making a mistake, and then goes for leg locks often as well. So he gives up position. I don't like to see a lot of that stuff. The leg locks, especially those knee bars. I mean, if you have to reverse something to get out of a situation, it has to be in use. But for actually just going for it and getting yourself out of a dominant position and going for a leg lock, that's the type of fighter Vettori is. So in my opinion, those are mistakes that he has to address. He has to do less of that kind of stuff, and he's going to actually get better and better as his career progresses. So he's a very talented fighter, has a lot of upside to him, but he's facing a very dangerous opponent, Uda, here. Uda's making his second octagon appearance. Obviously, he lost to Jay Collier in his UFC debut. That was a fantastic fight as long as it lasted, though. They were going back and forth. I mean, Uda actually had Collier hurt at one time, had him some serious trouble, but Collier managed to survive and then actually finished off Uda by really working that devastating clinch game and having success there as well. So Uda is more of your striking-based fighter. with, again, a more well-rounded game overall. You can put him on his back. He has okay takedown defense, but he's the type of fighter that his takedown defense lets him down from time to time. But once he gets on his back, he's definitely a guy that threatens for submissions, threatens to get reversals on you and get top position as well. So you got to be careful with Uda on the ground, but he is more of a striking-based fighter. So I think how this fight plays out is probably similar to the Collier fight. I think it should go back and forth a little bit, but I think ultimately Vettori will probably do some damage in the clinch, and his power and his athleticism will come through here, and he probably gets a stoppage over Uda. Now, whether it's by submission, by TKO, I think it's more likely by TKO along the way, but this should be a fun fight, and you can't really be that confident because Vettori is still so raw, and I think Uda's better than what he displayed in his UFC debut. I actually don't think he's that bad. So competitive fight, slight lean towards Vettori for me.
Yeah, Alberto Uda and Marvin Vettori on the feet are actually going to be pretty competitive. Uda's got some great Muay Thai skills, very dangerous in the Thai plum, has great knees and elbows on the inside, but Vettori is really dangerous on the inside as well. I mean, he's pretty stiff. Both guys are pretty stiff from distance, but especially Vettori. But Vettori is definitely improving in that department. You saw in one of his last bouts, in Venator against Araujo, just hammered his opponent with a big knee up the middle quickly, aggressively, and then just went for a submission against a black belt and pulled off a guillotine. Now, I'm not super impressed by the way that he went for that submission because basically he just drops to his back and goes for a guillotine, and if it doesn't work, you're in a bad position on the ground. Vettori has a decent ground game, but there are problems with that ground game because he is constantly giving up position to go for submissions, and if you don't pull it off, and in the UFC, most of the time, these kind of sacrifice submissions where you're giving up the position, you don't actually pull those off, then he's going to be on the bottom and then getting beat up on. So that is a huge concern. One of the main differences between these two is the fact that Uda is about 6 or 7 years older, and Uda is a little bit more less durable. You saw in the Collier fight, Uda started off great, landed a nasty knee up the middle, broke Collier's nose, but the second that Collier really started pressuring him back, he didn't handle it well, which is surprising for a Muay Thai fighter who likes fighting on the inside. He ate some nasty spinning back kicks, and then that kind of forced him to wilt. And if Vettori can really put the pressure on Uda, I can see Vettori winning this fight for sure. Now, Vettori is a little bit more athletic than Uda's last opponent, Collier, but he is a little bit smaller, a little bit more compact. But he does have a similar style. The main difference, though, is Vettori doesn't have the offensive wrestling of Collier. So I don't see Vettori getting a lot of takedowns and beating Uda up from top position and maybe wearing him down like Collier did. But I think Vettori can do more damage on the inside potentially if he, especially early in the fight where he's going to be at his most explosive. Now, I would have for sure picked Uda, but Vettori has spent some time at King's MMA in the past, and he did his entire training camp preparing for his UFC debut at King's MMA. And those guys can really sharpen and hone a fighter's skills. We've seen a lot of fighters just take their games to another level when they start training at King's with Master Cordero. So I think Vittori's going to be fully prepared here. Even though Uda does have some solid striking, I think Vettori can get in his face. And if they're going toe-to-toe, I think Vettori's the one that ends up on top and does not wilt. So I'm going to pick Vettori as well, although I think this fight is going to be competitive, especially early. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Colby Covington, who is 9-1, taking on UFC newcomer Max Griffin, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Covington, -260, the comeback on Griffin at +180. Right now, at the time of the recording, it's actually Covington -345. The comeback on Griffin is +285, and it's actually raised and went up a little bit recently. There's still 3-1s out there as well, so depending on where you look. But right now, at five dimes, it is -345 for Covington. A lot of parlays coming in, I'm sure, and obviously some straight action hitting Covington as well. I'm not really that surprised. I mean, stylistically, if you look at this matchup, Covington is the type of kryptonite Griffin usually does not do well against. So Covington, as we all know, is a wrestler. He's got that wrestling base that's outstanding. He gets the job done most of the time, getting the fight to the floor, grinding out his opponents, has some submission skill to go along with it as well. So Covington is improving his all-around game, getting better in striking as well, and working with a great camp in American Top Team. So this guy is a real prospect that's getting better and better and getting tested. I understand that he has suffered a setback, getting kind of guillotine choke, but that being said, I think that he's going to actually learn from that experience and probably try to avoid making that mistake again. And Griffin is not the type of fighter, even though he does have some subs, he's not the type of fighter that is going to probably look to submit Covington. He's going to look to knock him out. I mean, Griffin is one of these guys that on the feet, he definitely has some power and he's got some effective striking. I mean, he's a tough 16 vet for most of the people that don't know out there. He lost to Sakur by a 3-round triangle choke. And the interesting part of that fight was round one, it was pretty good. I mean, he actually won that fight, Griffin did, because he was able to sprawl and brawl. But in round two and round three, it cost him the fight because he was put on his back and the ground game kind of cost him. So that's the type of fighter Griffin is overall. But since that show, he has improved a great deal. And you could tell, I mean, his takedown defense is getting better. So he's not as easy to take down to the ground. And he's got dynamite in his hands and really confident about knocking people out. I mean, he's a solid, well-rounded vet at this point. And he's really much more than a striker overall. But that's exactly what he can do the best at, and that's what he excels at really, is knocking people out. He's got really nice boxing. Nothing overwhelming, but his power is effective, obviously, in both hands. So that's exactly the type of fighter that Covington does not want to see on the feet. Somebody that's going to try to take your head off and has accuracy and is able to do that sort of thing. Covington is definitely going to go for the takedowns here. I think he's going to be effective doing so. Griffin might sprawl and brawl early on, so it might get a little bit dangerous for Covington in the early parts of this fight. But eventually, as the fight progresses, I think Covington can hang in there, not get clipped by anything too hard, get Griffin to the floor. And once on the floor, I mean, I wouldn't be even shocked if Covington finishes Griffin on the ground. But I think more than anything else, he probably grinds Griffin out. I think Griffin's a savvy vet. He could do enough to survive, I think, and just kind of lose his UFC debut by decision. But with that being said, I do think if Griffin is matched up well in the UFC properly and he faces another striker, then you're going to see him win some fights. So don't count this guy out. But if he gets matched up against ground fighters and wrestlers like Covington, it's just stylistically not a good matchup for him. So I'm going to pick Covington to win, and it's probably going to be on the ground.
If this fight stays standing, Max Griffin definitely has a path to victory. He's a powerful striker, good kicks, heavy punches. So in the stand-up, he has a big edge. The problem is Colby Covington doesn't like to stand and trade for very long with anybody. Covington is an excellent wrestler, will shoot in for takedowns against anybody, and just is not afraid whatsoever of just going in there and just charging head forward and putting his head in his opponent's chest and dumping them on their back. It actually cost him in his last fight because he was a little too eager to take the fight to the floor against Worley Alves, got caught in Alves's patented guillotine choke, and got tapped out pretty quickly. But against Max Griffin, that is not nearly as much of a problem. Griffin, while he's dangerous and has some power, he does not have that type of submission game that can really threaten Covington. So realistically, the only way I see Griffin winning is puncher's chance when the fight is standing at the beginning of each round, or catching Covington with a knee or something on the way inside as he attempts the takedowns, because I know for a fact that Colby Covington is probably going to be trying to take this fight to the floor all three rounds to either win a decision or try to, you know, get maybe a TKO or submission along the way. But you have to absolutely favor Colby Covington. Griffin has had his issues, as Nick said, in the past with being taken down and being controlled on the ground, and that's exactly the type of game that Covington brings. So I think this potentially could be a walk in the park for Covington as long as he doesn't get caught. So my pick is going to be Colby Covington. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a welterweight contest between Neil Magny, who is 18-5, and Lorenz Larkin, who is 17-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Magny -230 to come back on Larkin at +170. Right now, it is Magny -140. The comeback on Larkin is +120. So needless to say, everybody out there coming in on Larkin, taking advantage of that dog money. Obviously, the line did open a tad bit high, to say the least. But that being said, it is what it is, and it is going to be a heck of a fight. I mean, at 2-1, it's pretty competitive. But right now, I think at buck 40, obviously, everybody thinks it is going to be just a super fight with guys being able to display what they do best, I think, in both sides of it, and probably come away with a win if they do that. If they stick to their game plan, if they basically follow the proper strategy and avoid the other person's strengths, I think this fight is kind of up in the air. I mean, obviously people are coming in on Larkin as far as the betting window goes because they think he can sprawl and brawl. Not really brawl. I mean, he's a great technical striker, Larkin is. So basically he can sprawl and outstrike Magny to the point where he might even knock him out. I mean, Larkin has a tremendous amount of power. He's got accuracy. He mixes his striking up really well. I mean, he is one of the best strikers in the UFC. Make no mistake about that. So his takedown defense is good enough that a lot of people believe he's going to be able to keep it upright and utilize that great striking and win this fight. So if he does that, he probably will win the fight. I think people are counting Magny out a little bit too much though here. I mean, this is again a tremendous matchup. Magny, if you look at what he's accomplished throughout his career, it's kind of been sick. I mean, the wins that he has, I'm actually surprised because I've been one that's actually underrated Magny at times. I know, surprising compared to what I just opened the line. I mean, I overrated him this time a little bit according to what the real line should be here as far as what I thought the action would be. But that being said, I'm the one that usually, again, kind of doesn't give Magny enough respect or doesn't really think he's as good as he is. But man, what he showed in some fights against top-notch competition, you cannot question that. I mean, I guess the concern with Magny is always going to be that chin. His strike defense isn't the greatest. He gets clipped. He gets rocked. I mean, it is tough betting a guy like that, especially against a striker that has all sorts of precise, accurate knockout power like Larkin. But that being said, overall, Magny is a very intelligent fighter. He keeps on improving. He showed us that he can weather the storm and come away on top as well. I think what he's going to look to do and what is underrated probably the most in his game is his wrestling and his takedown ability. He's going to look, obviously, to take this fight to the ground. Again, he's an intelligent fighter. He knows he's probably not going to have a tremendous amount of success striking with Larkin. Even though Magny's striking is not bad, he utilizes that long reach well. Again, he moves well. He does do a lot of good things on the feet. But in this particular matchup, I think that Magny will be smart and will try to slow this fight down, push Larkin up against the cage, which in the past, as we all know, Larkin has been stuck a little bit too much up against the cage, and he's had some problems against fighters that would do that to him. But other than that, he's going to look for takedowns. He's going to try to slow this fight down and really dominate Larkin on the ground. Now, if Magny does get top position, I could see him getting in a really prime position and doing some damage along the way, even looking for a sub and possibly getting Larkin out of there. Larkin does have an underrated ground game. I understand that, to go along with his takedown defense. He is pretty savvy on the ground, but I still think Magny right now, where he's improved the most, I mean, he's really been drilling the ground and he's gotten a lot better. And I think Magny does outclass Larkin on the ground. I think he's going to try to do that. And even if he misses the first takedown, he's going to try again. So Magny's going to be putting constant pressure on Larkin when he gets the opportunity to. And I think he's going to probably end up grinding out a close competitive decision. I think that's how it's probably going to play out. But watch out for a sleeper, and Magny maybe winning this fight by sub as well. I could see him maybe taking Larkin's back and putting in the rear naked choke. So I'm going to go against the grain. I do understand and I respect the action coming in on Larkin. But I do think, man, I finally woke up a little bit and believe that Magny's legit. And if his chin holds up in this fight, I do think he's probably going to win it. So I'm going to pick Magny to win.
Magny is definitely legit. I mean, you don't win 9 fights out of 10 by accident. The problem is his path to victory historically has been, you know, start off a little slow. Maybe his opponent gets over aggressive. His opponent maybe hurts him early and then they try to finish him. They run out of steam and then he just outlasts his opponent with his incredible conditioning. That's how he's won the majority of his fights. Hector Lombard started strong, had him hurt, then couldn't put him away. Magny turns the tides and then starts dominating him. You can just go through the line. There are a lot of fights where that happened, or where just maybe the fight was close early and then Magny just turns it on late, starts getting into a groove. I mean, he has the biggest reach in the division. So, and he's starting to be able to use it. He's got a great jab. And I think the thing that he does best right now is combine the distance striking with takedowns and ground and pound on the ground. So against Lorenz Larkin, I think he's going to have a bit of trouble. Larkin does not have conditioning issues, so I don't feel like Magny's excellent pace and conditioning is going to be a huge factor here. And Larkin is lightning quick with great accuracy and a pretty good pace on the feet as well. So maybe where Magny before was having a lot of success with the jab against a couple more slow, more plodding, power striking opponents, Larkin should be able to outmaneuver that jab, get inside and land some really good shots. Larkin has some good power on the feet. He mixes things up well. He has some nasty leg kicks, as you saw in the Tumenov fight, although he's going to have to be a little bit careful because of Magny's wrestling and ground game. But overall, I think this is a very winnable fight for Lorenz Larkin. Larkin's speed and ability to get inside and land those shots and maybe get out of the way are going to be a huge factor here. I think in this fight, Magny's definitely going to be at a disadvantage on the feet, even though he has a ridiculous reach advantage against everybody. Now, where Magny's biggest strength is going to be here is going to be on the ground. His wrestling, as I mentioned, has been a great attribute for him. And as Nick mentioned, Larkin has a terrible tendency, despite his good footwork and movement, to allow himself to get backed into the fence. And he's way too comfortable there. And if Magny's able to pressure him and back him into the fence, that's where takedown opportunities are going to arise. And Magny can do some damage in the clinch as well. So I'm definitely concerned about Larkin getting put in a bad position on the feet. But if he does not, if he is more composed, if he can, keep his distance and then get inside and land those good shots, I think he can do some serious damage. Between the two of them, they both have been hurt and knocked out in the past. Although I don't think Magny is a big time power striker, so Larkin shouldn't be too concerned about that. But Magny should definitely be concerned about Larkin. Even though Larkin doesn't have a ton of knockouts, you know, he has picked up some impressive wins over some good strikers like Santiago Ponzinibbio. So I do feel like if they're going toe-to-toe on the feet and Magny's trying to trade jabs for 1-2 combinations, it's going to be Larkin that gets the better of it. So I'm siding with Lorenz Larkin here. I think he pulls off the upset. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division for the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have Randa Marcos, who is 6-4, taking on Courtney Casey, who is 5-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Marcos -245, the comeback on Casey +175. Right now it is Marcos -140, the comeback on Casey is +120. So almost an exact same thing happened here. I mean, everybody coming in on the Larkin fight that we were talking about overall, the betting opinion was that Larkin is a live dog, and a lot of people believe Casey is as well in this spot. The Larkin one I can understand a little bit more so than this one. I mean, I've been a fan of Casey as far as even since her debut. I mean, I actually picked her to pull the upset win over Calderwood at that time, and she started off really well. But the thing is, you look at Casey, you look at her prior fights, and you just study her film, and the girl is definitely a talented fighter, has some reach over Marcos in this fight. So she's kind of long for the division for sure at 115 pounds. She has good striking ability on the feet. I mean, she puts together her boxing well. She's got good wrestling to go along with it, and she's got a good sub game. So Casey's a very well put together fighter that is capable of finishing the fight standing up or on the ground. She's aggressive, which I like as well. A lot of good qualities about her. But the problem is with Casey, I have no idea why, but even before her UFC debut, she slows down in fights. As the fight goes in round two, round three, oftentimes she's not the same fighter she was in round one. So she definitely has some cardio issues, and that needs to be addressed. Now, in my opinion, Marcos, I think that's one of her biggest flaws as well, is actually, she didn't look bad in her last fight. It was a very quality win, solid win for Marcos over Liburger. I think that was really a tougher spot than people realize, and Marcos looked great, and her cardio actually looked okay in that spot as well. But I think in the past, if anything with Marcos, I could say that she could improve her strike defense a little bit, and it was her cardio that I'd like to see kind of be a little bit stronger. And in this matchup with Casey, Marcos does definitely have the cardio edge, even though she's kind of been hindered in the past with that herself, I think, at least in my opinion. So this fight is going to come down to whether Marcos can weather that early storm. I mean, I think Casey's going to be aggressive in round one like she always is. I think she's probably going to win the first part of round one, even maybe take the whole round. And Marcos is going to find herself down probably around heading into round two. But and again, based on what we've seen before, until Casey proves us otherwise, I think in round two, Marcos is going to start taking over and possibly finishing Casey, or if not, maybe round three. If it does hit the scorecards, I think Marcos is obviously going to win two out of three rounds here in this spot and win the decision as well. Marcos is very good, underrated in some spots. I mean, she's her stand-up, we see it, continues to improve. She's got speed. She's got power. She's got confidence right now going into this fight as well. Obviously, we all know her strength is the ground. She's very capable of doing well on the ground against most competition. So Marcos is a complete fighter, and I just simply think that she is the better fighter of the two. So I would like to see Marcos get a little win streak put together here and kind of climb towards a title shot, because a lot of us thought, I think originally after the Ultimate Fighter show, that Marcos would definitely be a contender for that title. And I think she can get herself back in line by a quality win over Casey and maybe a few more fights. People would possibly consider that. So Marcos, talented. I want her to get back on track. Casey's a talented fighter as well. Should be a fun fight, but I am leaning a little bit more towards Marcos to get this fight.
Yeah, Marcos Casey, it should be definitely competitive in the first round. That's where Casey is at her best. She has a lot of power on the feet, even though the technique really isn't there. She makes up for it with aggression. I mean, she showcased some serious ability to do some punishment in that last fight against Stanziu, where she was landing good knees in the inside. She was winging some heavy punches on the feet. And then when she went to the ground, she wasn't just looking for submissions. She was advancing to dominant positions and then just dropping bombs on the canvas. The problem, though, is Randa Marcos is not Christina Stanziu. Marcos has a great ground game, great ability to wrestle. So between the two, Randa Marcos and Courtney Casey, Marcos should probably get the better of any and all scrambles on the canvas. Casey against Stanziu kind of relied on just being physically stronger than her opponent and just overpowering her. That's not going to happen against Marcos. Marcos is strong as well, and she can hold her own, and she has the technical advantages that should allow her to secure top position during scrambles and, at worst, just ride that position. On the feet, while Casey does have some power, her technique isn't great, and Marcos's technique is actually improving quite a bit. I know Marcos got outstruck by Kowalkiewicz, but I mean, Kowalkiewicz is earning a title, just earned a title shot. So that's not the worst thing in the world. And Marcos has shown serious improvement there. You saw in the last fight against Liebarger, where she actually outstruck Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger and was the better in the stand-up. I was shocked that she would be able to do that in that fight. And she was able to push a high pace, and while she may have had a little bit of conditioning issues in the past, she looked strong for all three rounds in that fight. So I think even though Courtney Casey's coming off a very, very impressive win, she really has one round to try to finish Randa Marcos, because I don't see Casey winning a decision. And if this fight gets out of the first round, I think Marcos is going to completely dominate it. I think Marcos can get takedowns when she wants them, and on the feet, even though Casey has the power, Marcos does have the technique, and I expect Marcos to get the better of the stand-up, especially after the first round, once the pop in Casey's punches starts to wane a little bit. So I'm definitely picking Randa Marcos here. I just don't see Courtney Casey finishing Marcos in the first round, and if that doesn't happen, I think Marcos takes over. So my pick is going to be Randa Marcos. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have a battle between Team McGregor and Team Diaz, as Team McGregor's Artem Lobov, who is 12-12-1 with one no contest, takes on Team Diaz's Chris Avila, making his UFC debut with a 5-2 mark. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Lobov -170 to come back on Avila at +130. And right now there is another spot where a lot of the public is coming in on the dog. It's Avila getting the love, because Lobov is all the way down to -115 right now. Avila is -105. So basically pick him with a slight lean towards Lobov. I mean, I opened it under 2-1, so it was a competitive line as well. So I understand Avila does have a shot. Simply put, it's because really neither one of these guys, I think, in my opinion, right now, deserve to kind of be in the UFC. Lobov is an experienced vet. He is a lot more savvy. If you look at his resume, I mean, he's at some spots they have him listed as 12-12, other spots 11-12, whatever. So he's about a 500 fighter. I think he is better and more talented than that. He's faced a lot of decent competition throughout his career, but the guy's not going to blow you away. And so far in the UFC, he's been disappointing to say the least, I think, with his performances. So this is a spot for Lobov to really get on track and prove that, hey, look, I know that my record's subpar. I know that most of you guys think I'm subpar out there, but I can win fights in the UFC. The UFC is kind of, I think, giving him a bone here with Avila. I mean, Avila is making UFC debut. I think, again, his resume outside of the UFC, he's listed at 5-2, 6-2 out there as well. It's not very impressive. I mean, the guy, it has a little bit of talent, but, and he's still young enough that he can improve, and he has Nate Diaz as a teammate. So he's from a really good camp. So I'm expecting Avila to grow as a fighter overall as his career progresses, but I don't think he's really ready to be in the UFC at this point. So this one, it's really kind of a tough spot because you have Lobov that's coming into this fight needing a win desperately to probably hang on to his job. That little rivalry that we have taking place, obviously, rivalry between Conor McGregor's camp and Nate Diaz's camp as well. I think, honestly, that's probably the reason Avila got this fight. They brought him in to kind of add to that hype and add to the craziness a little bit. And they know it's probably going to be a fairly competitive fight as well. So the way it plays out, though, because Avila, I guess I should get into his background a little bit. He's kind of more of a long-rangey, well-rounded fighter, still raw, like I said. He's still developing his skill set. His stand-up game is okay, but at the same time, he's a little bit too patient for my liking. At times, he needs to be a little bit more aggressive. His clinch game is okay as well. He does look for takedowns often, and he's going to do that in his fight against Lobov. He's going to look to put Lobov on his back, try to ground him out or finish by submission, of course. It's going to be difficult, though, I think, for him. And I think what's going to happen is Lobov is going to be putting the pressure on Avila. Avila's not going to be able to get this fight to the floor, or at least not very often, because Lobov, whether you like to admit or not, he has improved on the ground. His takedown defense is definitely his kryptonite, along with his ground game, for sure. But that being said, he is improving, and this matchup with Avila, I think he'll be okay in this spot. So Lobov, I think, will sprawl, brawl, put the pressure on, land the harder shots along the way. And if it hits the scorecards, he'll win a decision. If not, I think Lobov has a shot to actually win by knockout as well along the way. So even though everybody's backing Avila here, and I could see maybe Avila getting a lucky spot on the ground, and I'm saying lucky because I don't expect it to kind of happen, and maybe taking his back and sinking in a choke or something like that. Maybe that happens, but I really doubt it. I think what we're going to see here is a Lobov either finishing the fight along the way or him winning by a kind of somewhat competitive decision, but clear enough that he should get the nod on the card. So despite people backing Avila, I do disagree. I think Lobov really is the better fighter if you take a closer look.
I wouldn't favor Artem Lobov against just about anybody in the current UFC featherweight division, but thankfully Chris Avila is not in the current UFC featherweight division. Now, Lobov, he has not looked good so far, let's be honest. In the Ultimate Fighter finale, he got dominated on the ground, although, to his credit, he avoided being submitted by Ryan Hall, which is impressive in its own right. So at least he knows how to defend himself, even if he can't stop takedowns from a great ground fighter. And in his next fight, I mean, he just got completely dominated against a guy that just had superior reach and knew how to use it in Alex White. And Alex White isn't exactly a world beater in the featherweight division either. Now, Chris Avila, the main difference here is he's just, I don't think he's UFC ready. It feels like he got rushed to the UFC so that they could make this matchup of a battle between the two fight camps. And Avila, maybe down the line, he could have been UFC ready, but realistically, he is just not there yet. He has some wins. He has a bit of power on the feet, although I don't think that's going to matter here because Lobov is primarily just a striker, wants to slug it out, wants to brawl, has heavy hands in his own. And Avila, while he has a decent jab, and he has not refined his striking like the Diaz brothers yet, he has a long ways to go before he really starts putting it together on the feet. And Avila, while he has a decent ground game, and he's showcased some rear naked chokes and stuff in the past, I mean, Lobov was able to survive Ryan Hall, and Avila really doesn't have much of a takedown game. I mean, primarily his best attack to pick up submissions has been to clinch and then try to take his opponents back standing. He does that repeatedly. So I don't see Lobov really messing around in that department either. So more often than not, I just see Chris Avila being a little bit overwhelmed by this UFC debut, the spotlight. Lobov, while he's not that impressive overall, he is way more experienced than Avila. He's faced way better fighters. Avila has lost two decisions already to two of the better prospects that he's faced. But, I mean, it's not like he lost decisions to amazing dudes that are right now ready for the UFC. I mean, he just does not seem quite ready for the UFC. And I'm not sure Lobov is a UFC caliber featherweight either, but at least he's got the experience. He's a vet and he should be prepared for this. And I don't see Avila keeping Lobov at the end of his jab, and I don't see Avila picking up takedowns because his offensive wrestling isn't that great. So overall, I think this is a winnable fight for Artem Lobov. I think the public is coming in more fading Lobov than actually checking out Chris Avila and saying this guy's amazing. And I think that they're wrong. I think this is Lobov's fight to lose. I think he pulls it off, whether it's a knockout or a decision. So my pick is going to be Artem Lobov. Now, moving down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Raquel Pennington, who is 7-6, taking on Elizabeth Phillips, who is 5-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Pennington, minus 270, the comeback on Phillips at plus 190. Right now, it is actually Pennington minus 260. The comeback on Phillips is plus 220. So this fight has had two action come in. Early on, it was all Phillips. Now, as we get closer to fight time, it's back on Pennington. So the sports books are fairly even on this fight. Hopefully, we're going to need Pennington to win this fight, because honestly, I think that's the way to go. That's why she's a solid favorite here as well. I just think she's underrated as she's been throughout her whole career. I understand her resume. She's, again, another one of these almost 500 type of fighters, but she is way better than her record indicates. She's fought against decent competition throughout her career. Not that Phillips has not. I mean, with her fighting, obviously, in the UFC for a few fights, she's faced decent competition as well. But that being said, I think Pennington is just further ahead. And as far as the stylistic matchup here, I mean, Pennington is not the type of girl that you could take down easily. You could control on the ground easily as well. And she is a striking based fighter. So she is the type of fighter that could keep it upright in most cases, sprawl brawl. And then she's very effective with her striking. I mean, really good clean boxing. She's actually rounded out her game a lot more now. As you could tell, she has a ground game to go along with it. She's very dangerous as far as submission game goes. So she's just a fighter that continues to improve, get better, fun to watch. I mean, her loss to Holm, not too long ago was pretty respectable if you look how that fight played out. I mean, she gave Holly Holm everything she could handle in that spot. So that's the type of fighter Pennington is. And Phillips, although she's shown some toughness along the way in her career as well, she hits very hard. She's strong for the division. I think she's going to probably look to take Pennington to the ground along the way. Her wrestling's not bad. There's a lot of good things you can say about Phillips as well, but one thing she does do is she tends to slow down as the fight goes, as we mentioned with other fighters earlier as well. So Phillips is another one of those types, I think, that does slow down as the fight progresses a little bit. Now, she is getting a little bit better. I mean, I have noticed somewhat of an improvement in that aspect as well. But the problem with Phillips is she's very hittable as well. I mean, she does get tagged a little bit more than you like to see. Pennington's the type of fighter that's going to put her combinations together well. She's going to probably tag Phillips up along the way, outstrike her, outscore her. She could possibly finish Phillips on the feet. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens as well. So I think it's a pretty clear-cut fight. If it hits the scorecards, I mean, it'll be fairly competitive, I'm sure. I mean, a lot of the women fights that are matched up decent are usually tend to be competitive, especially on the scorecards. But I really don't see how Pennington loses two out of three rounds here. I mean, I think she banks a 29-28 type of decision easily, but probably a 30-27 type of decision as well. And again, I think there's a wild card that Pennington could actually finish Phillips with just accumulating a lot of shots along the way and maybe, you know, winning by strikes here. So I could see Pennington winning in a bunch of different ways. And I think she is clearly the better fighter. And I think she is justified to be at 2.5-1 or a little bit higher over Phillips as well. So my pick is going to be Pennington to win this fight.
I just don't see a very good path to victory here for Elizabeth Phillips. Now, she showcased a little bit of pop in her hands, but Pennington has a great chin. I don't think she's ever even been hurt in a fight, and she's been in there against much better, much more dangerous strikers than Phillips. I mean, she just beat Former title challenger Betch Kohea. She had a competitive decision loss to Holly Holm. She's been in there against Kat Zingano. She's been in there against just some really terrific, amazing fighters so far in her UFC career and then even outside the UFC. So I think Raquel Pennington is definitely somebody that you should not be sleeping on despite, you know, her 7-6 record. And Elizabeth Phillips, she just has not impressed me that much overall. I mean, two split decision losses to start her UFC career, one against a woman that would later drop down to the strawweight division. And then her last fight, she won a decision against Jessamine Duke. But I mean, even that fight was mildly competitive. And Duke has not looked good, like lost like 6 in a row or something. So that's not exactly a win that was career defining or anything. Phillips just does not impress me. She doesn't have a great striking technique. On the ground, she's got a little bit of wrestling, but she's not a big submission threat. She's not a huge ground and pound threat. She just seems a little underdeveloped overall and just doesn't quite have the skills to hang with not even the top half girls in the division. And Raquel Pennington, her biggest problem throughout her career has just been, you know, pulling the trigger a little bit. Sometimes she's just a little hesitant to engage, even though she's got the technique, she's got some power, and she has a underrated ground game. So looking at this fight, if Phillips tries to be aggressive on the feet, I think Pennington can counter-strike her and land some good shots. And if Phillips goes to the ground, Pennington has the better ground game and could definitely submit her. She has good guillotine chokes. She's already submitted at least 2 opponents in the UFC so far. So Phillips is going to have to be very cautious about that as well. And I don't think Phillips can just bully her against the fence either. So I think overall, this is just a very winnable fight for Raquel Pennington, and I think she pulls off a decision. So my pick is going to be Raquel Pennington. Now, moving on to the main event of the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a feature bantamweight contest between Cody Garbrandt, who is 9-0, and Takeya Mitsugaki, who is 21-9-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Garbrandt -300 to come back on Mizugaki at +220. And right now, looking over 5 times, there has been some significant action. This is probably the third spot on this card that the line has gone a little wacky here. It is now Garbrandt -600. The comeback on Mizugaki is +450. So people coming in straight on Garbrandt early on, then of course everybody kind of parlaying Garbrandt along the way as well. A lot of respect going towards Garbrandt. I do understand it again. I mean, Garbrandt is a popular fighter. His performance over Almeida in the last fight, man, it was something for sure, to say the least. I mean, Almeida, as we all know, is a very dangerous fighter. Garbrandt was the underdog in that fight. He came through in fantastic fashion. I mean, he definitely gained a whole new level of respect to fans out there that believed him in the first place. I think, I mean, they believe this guy's a true contender right now. Of course, Garbrandt also talking smack to the current champion, Dominic Cruz. I don't think that hurts him. I think a lot of people I see both aspects of it. A lot of people are saying Garbrandt shouldn't be talking smack. He's not ready for a title shot yet. And I see the other people basically saying it's a good move. And I do believe it is a good move. Why not throw it out there? I mean, the more you throw it out there, the more likely it will become if Garbrandt can get the win over Mizugaki. So he's looking a little bit down the road, I think too far, but I'm sure he's got his focus on Mizugaki, because in this fight, it is going to be a tough one, a lot tougher than the current odds indicate. I think people are disrespecting Mizugaki. I know that Mizugaki got blasted by Dominic Cruz. He's been knocked out a couple times in his career. And against a guy like Garbrandt, which has wrestling and the ability to probably keep this fight upright, Garbrandt should be the faster, better striker overall. Mizugaki's chin probably doesn't last. That's what most people are thinking. That's why they're coming in this spot. And if it does hit the scorecards, even if Mizugaki gets lucky enough in most people's eyes to survive, Garbrandt should come away with a clear decision. Man, I think if it does hit the scorecards, it is going to be a tight decision. I think it's going to be a competitive decision. I think Mizugaki is going to be able to strike with Garbrandt. I mean, hopefully his chin does hold up, because I think we're going to see a fantastic fight of war along the way. But make no mistake, I understand that Garbrandt's the favorite for a reason. I mean, he is the better striker, and I think there is a chance that he does finish Mizugaki along the way. So I am going to pick Garbrandt to win this fight. I just think that with Mizugaki's skill set overall, he is going to be one of the toughest challenges in Garbrandt's career. So I don't think the line is justified at minus 600 right now, even if Garbrandt goes out there and floors him. I mean, in the first minute or so, I wouldn't be shocked. I still don't think the line is justified in that spot. I mean, maybe I'm hard-headed or whatnot, but I just think Mizugaki deserves a little bit more respect. So to me, especially where the current line is, it is a dog or pass situation. I think there really could be a little bit of value possibly on Mizugaki. But despite all that being said, got to go with what should happen, and Garbrandt should get the W here.
This is actually a lot trickier fight than people are giving it credit. Now, Cody Garbrandt is coming off an incredible performance where he just took the fight to Thomas Almeida and knocked him out quickly in the first round. That was by far the best performance of his entire career. He looked amazing in that fight. His defense wasn't great. He actually ate a couple shots, but he just stayed right in Almeida's grill, took advantage of Almeida being a bit of a slow starter, and put him away. So major credit there. I don't think that type of game plan is going to work quite as well against Mizugaki because Mizugaki is a savvy vet. I mean, don't sleep on this guy. He has decent power in his hands, and he can throw good combinations. He's pretty good, actually, when he's getting pressured. He can strike off of his back foot very well with some good counters, and he can do damage with both hands, and he works to the body as well. I mean, he is just a very well-rounded striker that pushes a high pace, has a good tempo. I mean, his main issue is while he does have some pop, he doesn't have just that pure one-punch knockout power that usually can help an underdog pull off a major upset. That being said, if Cody Garbrandt is not respecting Mizugaki, and if he just charges in trying to put him away quickly, he could be in for a major surprise. Now, Mizugaki, you know, he's been kind of used as a litmus test for top fighters. When Dominic Cruz came back from injury, it was against Mizugaki. Cruz steamrolled him, and then after another injury layoff, ended up winning the title. Aljamain Sterling, another top prospect, was given Mizugaki as a test, was able to get some takedowns, ended up pulling off a submission. So, you know, they kind of passed that test. Now, Garbrandt, this is going to be a little bit trickier because I don't think Garbrandt's wrestling is amazing, so it's not like he can just take Mizugaki off of his feet and dominate him on the ground, although it's possible he could pull off a couple takedowns here. And on the feet, I think this fight is going to be a bit competitive. Now, Garbrandt definitely has more power, but his chin is worse than Mitsugaki's. So potentially that could even out. If Mizugaki lands something solid, Garbrandt could get hurt. If Garbrandt lands, you know, a monster strike, then he could hurt Mizugaki. I mean, Mizugaki did get hurt badly by Dominic Cruz on the ground from those ground and pound strikes. So definitely possible. But I'm gonna lean with Garbrandt. But again, I think the line is completely out of control, and it's actually made me consider putting a small bet on Mizugaki just the potential that he has to pull off this upset. It's not like Cody Garbrandt has been completely destroying everyone. I mean, UFC debut, that was a competitive fight until he got the finish against Brimage. And then against Henry Briones, I mean, he got rocked in that fight, and that was a pretty competitive stand-up affair. So I do think that Garbrandt should win, but seriously, I don't expect a complete one-sided blowout like a lot of people are expecting. So just be cautious out there, but I am picking Cody Garbrandt. Now, kicking off the pay-per-view main card, we have a welterweight contest between Tim Means, who is 25-7-1, taking on UFC newcomer Saba Hamasi, who is 11-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Means minus 380 to come back on Hamasi at plus 260. Right now it's Means minus 440. The comeback is plus 350. So a little bit more support coming in on Means. I know a lot of people don't really know Hamasi all that well. I mean, he was a tough 21 vet. So those people that follow the Ultimate Fighter shows might have seen him on that show. He lost a very competitive decision. to Carrington Banks on that show, I believe, as well. So he has had the Ultimate Fighter experience. Of course, he just fought recently and beat a solid veteran, and George Pitino as well. So this guy is the type of fighter that is getting out there. I mean, outside of the UFC, he's getting a little bit more popular. He obviously trains at a good camp with American Top Team to go along with it. So he's getting constantly improving. He's getting good training partners, and he's the type of fighter that, man, he's a powerful striker. I mean, that's what he basically is. He's explosive. He has a lot of speed to go along with it. He utilizes a jab well, follows up often with a big right hand, and that's usually what puts the opponents down. So really the guy is a threat on the feet, and Means cannot take him lightly. Of course, we all know Means is coming back from his short suspension. You know, in my opinion too, by the way, the PED little mini suspension that he had there, he was very honest up front, and we had an interview on MMA Ozbreaker with it. So I respect Tim Means for saying that. I believe what he said was accurate, and he wasn't aware of exactly the supplements he was taking, all that stuff. So I don't think it was actually that bad of a look for Means, especially how honest and upfront he was about the whole situation. So coming into this fight, his stock is still going to be sky high. A lot of fans definitely respect him still. A lot of people believe that he's a very talented fighter and definitely a threat at 170, and he really is. I mean, he has the knockout power, the ability, the aggressiveness on the feet to stop a lot of people. Obviously, we know that as well. He's got the wrestling to take people down, do some ground and pound, vicious ground and pound, and then fights that way as well. So this guy is a finisher, and he's a tough matchup for your official UFC debut. So he should be favored over a guy like Kamasi, because honestly, Means could win this fight by knockout. Means could get this fight to the floor and probably finish it on the ground as well. Or if it does somehow, some way, I doubt it does go, but if it goes, hits the scorecards, Means probably wins the decision as well. So I think that's Kamasi's biggest kryptonite, honestly, in his fight, is obviously he's going to have to deal a little bit with the reach of Tim Means, but outside of that, he needs to avoid Means basically controlling tempo of the fight, getting some takedowns, and finishing this fight on the ground a little bit. Because Kamasi, even though he does have okay takedown defense and it's improving, I mean, the ground is definitely his kryptonite still, and that's the way he can lose this fight. He's going to want to stand and bang with Means, and I think these guys will slug it out for a little bit. And that's why that alone right there, Kamasi does have a puncher's chance. So those of you guys that are so confident in Tim Means, I understand it. He's a better fighter. He's going to probably win this fight. And I'm saying probably because Kamasi does have an above average kind of puncher chance. I mean, that's how powerful this guy is. So be careful. This isn't exactly an easy bet, especially if the line near 4-1 or over. I would approach this fight with caution a little bit, probably skip it. But that being said, I mean, Means is the better fighter. I'm looking forward to seeing him fight. I think the guy is definitely one of the toughest outs at lightweight or welterweight. He's been having some success at welterweight. So I do believe that Means is the better fighter. He's going to probably win this fight.
This should be a really fun battle between two very solid strikers. Kamasi has a ton of power on the feet, especially with his right hand. So that's definitely not something you should be underestimating. But the big problem here is the fact that Kamasi is taking the fight on really short notice, and it's not like he's stepping in there against a chump. Tim Means is right on the fringe of the top 15, just a very dangerous welterweight with a lot of power, high pace, high energy. He's durable, he's tough, he's scrappy, and it is not easy to pick up a win against him, especially now that, you know, he has moved up to the welterweight division full time. He's embraced it and he's looked terrific, and he's taking out people left and right. And Sabah Kamasi, he trains at a good gym. He was featured on that Ultimate Fighter season, had a very close fight against Carrington Banks that could have gone either way, but ended up losing it and not advancing on the show. But he's looked great in his fights outside the UFC to earn this opportunity. A lot of quick finishes, first round knockouts. Just he packs a lot of heat behind his punches. So that's something that Tim Means is going to have to be careful about. But really, the only person that's ever really hurt Tim Means on the feet was Matt Brown. And I don't think Hamasi's at that level yet, although Means can't just ignore Hamasi's striking. But for the most part, just with the short notice UFC debut against a scrappy, tough veteran in Tim Means, I think Hamasi's going to have his hands full here. And unless he lands just a massive right hand that Means doesn't see coming, I think Means just outpaces him and either picks up a knockout along the way or potentially wins a decision. But this is definitely Tim Means' fight to lose. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Hyung-Joo Lim, who is 13-5-1. who is also facing a short notice UFC newcomer in Mike Perry, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Lim, -315, the comeback on Perry at +235, and this is another spot where line margins have tightened up. It's staying basically similar to the openers. Lim, -270, the comeback on Perry is now +230, so two-way action on this fight. A little bit more dog support coming in on Perry, but a little bit more parlay action obviously coming in on Lim as well. This isn't exactly a fight that you want to go crazy betting either. I mean, Lim, as we all know, he has some talent. I mean, the guy has some size for the welterweight division, has a tremendous amount of knockout power, has a little bit of wrestling to go along with it. I mean, the guy's a finisher. That's what he does. He's hard to deal with in there. I mean, I understand that it's unfortunate for him. He's coming off of a pretty bad loss to Magny. I mean, Magny was able to finish him there in the second round of their last fight, which opened my eyes even more, honestly, to Magny. That was an impressive win for him as well. It showed a lot of heart and toughness. But Lim is beatable and susceptible to fighters at times, and his stock kind of dropped to, I should say, decent competition at times, of course, when you hit the upper tier of welterweights, and that's exactly where kind of Lim deserves to be. He needs to be fighting the upper tier guys. So, but along the line, he's going to get picked off from time to time, but he is a very dangerous fighter that's capable of finishing a lot of those guys as well. I mean, he's just got that strength, that aggressiveness, I mean, that finishing ability. So Lim is definitely a dangerous fighter, but his stock has dropped a little bit. I mean, he does look a little bit more suspect, even though it is a quality opponent that he lost against. You got definitely keep your eye on Lim as far as his chin might start going a little bit more. He's not necessarily young, especially in MMA years. He's only 31 years old, but I mean, he's been in some wars now. We all have seen that too, even in the UFC. So Lim's defense isn't the greatest at times. I mean, his offense is pretty dang good, like I said, but defensively he could use some improvement. And I think it's not going to really be a drastic change overnight. He's got a long way to go with that. So with that being said, and the reason I'm saying that is Perry, that's his best shot here. I mean, Perry is definitely a heavy hitter. He's another one of these guys. We were just talking about Homasi in the last fight, that he's got a lot of knockout power. Perry does as well. I mean, he's younger. He's 24 years old. The guy is definitely a powerhouse. He's one of these, a strong athletic welterweights as well, fast, explosive type of fighter. Usually on the feet, he picks his spots and then throws heavy leather, whether it's with his hands or his feet. I mean, defensively, Perry definitely needs some improvement. Again, so this is one of these fights that both fighters offensively can do some serious damage, but both fighters defensively need to seriously improve and are very hittable. And there's definitely some question marks and concerns surrounding both guys in that aspect. But overall, I think Perry's just going to be outclassed here. I do think Lim is going to be a little bit longer. He's going to be a little bit tough to deal with when, for Perry and making his UFC debut, of course. I just don't think he's going to have a true advantage in any area other than landing that hard shot that could put Lim, out cold. So Perry does have a puncher's chance, and it's a difficult spot to bet because I wouldn't lay the juice against Perry in this spot either. I mean, considering that Lim is coming off of a disappointing loss. And this should be a bounce back fight, but at the price, it's probably not worth it. So this is a fight that I would personally stay away from. I do think the Lim is going to be too much and probably finishes Perry along the way. So my pick is going to be Lim.
Watching Perry, he has a lot of power on the feet. He's pretty composed overall, but his striking defense is not that impressive. His chin is not very good, although he does bounce back pretty quickly after getting hurt. But, I mean, he's been hurt and knocked down and dropped by much worse strikers than Hyungju Lim. And with this fight being on short notice, and I expect it to be just a pure stand-up fight for the most part, I think he's going to be in big trouble. Perry, he does occasionally work for takedowns, so that is something that he'll consider, but with the way that he shoots in, I can see Lim just connecting with that beautiful step in knee that he has, that has absolutely slaughtered several opponents in the past. So Perry's going to have to be very cautious about that. And then just the fact that Lim is monstrous in the welterweight division could just be enough. I mean, Perry's a pretty good sized guy, but Hyungju Lim might be the biggest welterweight in the entire division in terms of how much weight he cuts and everything. Now, that has potentially had a negative effect with his conditioning, as you saw in the Neil Magny fight, where he started very strong, had Magny hurt, and then couldn't finish him, and then Magny turned the tide on him and started beating him up from top position on the ground. Now, I don't see Perry doing that in this fight. His wrestling isn't good enough to dominate Lim on the ground, and on the feet, if they're standing toe-to-toe, while Perry has some power, and he actually is a very solid overall striker, the chin and defense just leave so much to be desired here that I think at some point Lim connects with something heavy, and considering how powerful he is and how capable he is of getting those nasty finishes, I think Perry is just asking for it. So at some point, Lim's going to connect with something nasty, and I think he gets a highlight reel knockout to his added to his career highlight reel. So my pick is going to be Hyungju Lim. Now, again, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Rick Story, who is 19-8, taking on Donald Cerrone, who is 30-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I put Cerrone minus 180, the comeback on Story at plus 140. Right now, looking over at five times, it's Cerrone minus 165. The comeback on Story is at plus 145. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there has been some two-way action on this fight. It seems like the overall public opinion is favoring Cerrone in this spot. A little confused, a little head-scratcher type of situation here for me because, man, I mean, everybody seemed against Cote, everybody was on Cote's wagon over Cerrone, thinking that Cote was going to be the bigger, stronger welterweight. I mean, he's a true middleweight, or he was fighting at middleweight, and he's going to be definitely the stronger fighter at welterweight over Cerrone. He's going to have too much power for him. Cerrone looked great in that fight. I mean, he proved everybody wrong. I mean, the people that were backing Cote definitely were surprised. Cerrone is a great fighter. Even at welterweight, he can hang with the big boys, and he does well. Obviously, he's proven that, especially in his last fight with Cote. Well, seems like everybody got off that wagon and kind of hopped on Cerrone after his win, though, over Cote, and thought, okay, look, this guy's legit even at welterweight. So a lot more people are kind of counting out Rick Story in this spot, I think, a little bit too much. This is definitely an interesting fight because Cerrone is such a talented offensive fighter. I mean, the guy on the feet is definitely going to have an advantage over Rick Story. I think he's a better, more well-versed striker for sure. He's got more ways to finish the fight even on the feet with his kicks, with his hands, of course. He's got good clinch game, everything that you like to see offensively. He does have some holes defensively, though, and it really starts with his body. I mean, we know that that's basically a flaw that stands out in most people's minds. Story is a smart fighter. He does go to the body. He digs at that body. He's got some power as well. So I guarantee you Story is going to be looking to kind of land some shots to the body and kind of test that out for Cerrone. But make no mistake, Cerrone definitely has a slight edge on the feet overall. Now on the ground, of course, Rick Story is the wrestler. He's the powerhouse. He's going to be the one that typically likes to grind fighters out, maybe even look for takedowns along the way and kind of control, drop some ground and pound. Story's going to have to be careful here because Cerrone, even off his back, is dangerous. I mean, if we look back in the past, Story did fight, I don't want to say a similar fighter, but a guy that was savvy on the ground, like Mike Pyle, and Story was able to control that fight, but on the ground he did have some difficulty with Pyle's offense. Now, Cerrone is going to do that and even more, I think, I mean, as far as give Story some difficulty. So Story has to be careful not to get caught up on the ground if he's on top here in this spot, because Cerrone, even though Story's a hard guy to sub, I think Cerrone could definitely possibly come through and pull off a submission win here as well if Story's not careful. So you got to have some concerns all over the place for Rick Story here as far as what Cerrone can bring to the table offensively. But that's why he's favored. And to be honest with you, I do see some possible value on Story at this price because I think Story's not going to let that happen. I think Story's going to be able to push the pace. He's going to, again, use his boxing, push forward a little bit, back Cerrone up, pin him against the cage, and kind of grind on Cerrone along the way. I wouldn't be surprised if he does go for a takedown or two, but hopefully he doesn't play the ground game too much with Cerrone in this spot because I think on the feet, people are going to be surprised and Story will actually be able to strike a lot better than people are expecting against a guy like Cerrone. So I really think it is Story's fight to win or lose. I think if he doesn't get caught, he doesn't get finished. If this fight goes to the scorecards, he's going to win. And then there's also that possibility, even though Cerrone's ultra tough, that Story's power does come into play here, digs that body, sets some things up, maybe gets rid of Cerrone along the way as well. So for me, I'm going to go with the underdog here. I'm going to pick Story. I think that, I mean, the guy has proven to me he's been in there with legit fighters. I don't think Cerrone's going to be something he hasn't seen in the past, even though both these guys are tremendous fighters. And you can say the same thing for Cerrone, but I think this is a true coin flip type of fight, but I'm going to go with the underdog. I think Rick Story probably gets a decision here over Donald Cerrone.
I think Rick Story is the perfect type of fighter to take advantage of Donald Cerrone moving up to the welterweight division. Now, Cerrone actually is going to be a little bit taller, have a little bit longer reach, but with Rick Story, he doesn't care about height and reach. He's the type of guy that gets in your face. He puts pressure on you, and Donald Cerrone does not like fighters that pressure him. You've seen it time and time again. You know, Nate Diaz just keeping those jabs and long straight punches right in his face. Anthony Pettis landing the beautiful body kick that crumpled him into a heap. Dos Anjos got right in his grill. And Rick Story just gets right in your grill. You've seen him face off against similar aggressive and talented technical strikers in the past, and he's done exceptional against them. You look at his fights against Thiago Alves. He got in Alves's face, went for takedowns, went to push him into the fence, just pressured him, won the first two rounds, won the fight. Tarek Safadin, most recently. Safadin just could not get that open space he needed to get his kicking game going. And Rick Story just kept the pressure on him, even though he didn't get a lot of takedowns there, and easily won the fight. Even Gunnar Nelson, who's not quite the striker, but a great ground game, a better ground game than Donald Cerrone, and Story just got right in his face, kept the pressure on, and easily won the decision. So that's the type of style that Rick Story brings. And I think as long as he is aggressive on the feet and doesn't give Cerrone a lot of space, then he should be in really good shape here. My main concern actually is if Story gets a little too aggressive and wild on the feet, maybe gets a little overconfident and wants to stand toe-to-toe briefly with Cerrone, that could definitely backfire, because while Story is very tough, he has been dropped by Kelvin Gastelum before, so it's not like his chin is made of granite. And then my other issue is on the ground, Story is a little bit susceptible. You saw, obviously, Damian Maia. That's Damian Maia, but Maia was able to manhandle him on the ground. And then, as Nick mentioned, the Mike Pyle fight where Story got takedowns but couldn't do anything with them and actually lost due to a more active opponent on their back. And Donald Cerrone is extremely active off of his back. So if I'm Rick Story, I threaten the takedown, but for the most part, I am clinching. And I am just wailing away on Cerrone to the body with those just combinations of hooks he likes to throw in dirty boxing along the fence once he finally gets his opponent cornered. Like, that's the type of style that Story needs to win this fight, just to make it a more of a blood and guts, on the inside type of fight. Cerrone doesn't like it when you get in his face. Eddie Alvarez landed just some brutal uppercuts on the inside in that first round that he was easily able to win the first round against Cerrone. So as long as Story can just keep a high tempo, get in Cerrone's face, I think he's got a great shot at pulling off the upset. It's just all about not giving Donald Cerrone a chance to get comfortable. And Cerrone and Rick Story does a great job of doing that against just about every opponent he's ever faced. So I have to side with Rick Story here. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Anthony Rumble Johnson, who is 21-5, taking on Glover Teixeira, who is 25-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Johnson, minus 270, the comeback on Teixeira at plus 190. Right now it is Johnson actually minus 190, and the comeback on Teixeira is plus 165. Line dropped actually today a little bit as well. So a little bit more dog action recently coming in on Teixeira. He went from plus 190 to down to plus 165. There is going to be a tremendous amount of two-way action at the sports books for this fight. Both guys are going to get respect, so I don't think it's going to be a big decision for most books out there either way. I mean, Anthony Johnson, let's look at the matchup, how it is. Anthony Johnson is a beast on the feet. He's got good wrestling. He's able most of the time to sprawl and brawl, keep the fight upright, and knock people out. That's what he does. So Johnson is a devastating striker. Teixeira at age 36 is not getting any younger. He's been in several wars throughout his career. He's a talented fighter, but that chin will probably not hold up to what Johnson's going to throw at him. If it does, though, if it does hold up, Teixeira obviously is the better, more talented fighter overall. There's no question about that in my mind. Teixeira has great striking to go along with a tremendous ground game. I mean, I think that the diehard MMA fans know how good his ground game is, but those people that might be new to the sport don't realize how good Teixeira is in jiu-jitsu. I mean, the guy is a phenom on the ground. So he's able to, in most cases, get the fight to the ground with his wrestling, solid wrestling, and he's able to finish fights on the ground with his submissions or get in position and stop the fight that way. So Teixeira, a very game fighter, very complete fighter, very excellent fighter in regards to even getting a title shot. I mean, the guy has been in there with the best, and even against John Jones, I mean, he hung in there I mean, it wasn't a big shocker that he didn't get the W there, but I mean, he got that shot and he's the type of fighter that deserves it. And with a win here, obviously he's probably going to be in line for another shot. And that Cormier fight would be interesting with Teixeira, to say the least. So that is a spot where he wants to be in. Now, I don't know if it's going to happen though, because again, I think Teixeira has to kind of weather the early storm, and Johnson early on is going to be devastating. So I am leaning a little bit more towards Johnson in the spot. I think he probably does finish Teixeira early on and get the job done. But if not, I could easily see Teixeira kind of outlasting Johnson in the spot, getting his back, and maybe possibly subbing him. I know Johnson, his cardio at times is probably not gauged accurately, because I mean, he has looked okay and he's gone three rounds and tough fights before, but he does have a tendency to slow down. I mean, we've seen it time and time again as well. So his cardio is definitely suspect and you have to be concerned. Now in this fight against Teixeira, I think he could be able to sprawl brawl, take his time a little bit. And even if it goes to deeper waters, he might fare okay. And, you know, because of the scorecards, I doubt this fight goes to cards, but if it does, it'll be interesting to see which way the fight ends up going. But that being said, I still think that Johnson is just too much of a beast to deal with as far as Teixeira on the feet. And he probably gets the job done. But as far as a betting angle goes, I wouldn't lay it. There's no way I would lay it over a guy like Teixeira. He's just too good, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he pulls off this upset. So I'm leaning with Johnson as my pure pick, but it is definitely a dog or pass situation.
I have a ton of respect for both of these guys. You know, Anthony Johnson, Glover Teixeira, both coming off of very impressive victories. Johnson was able to withstand Ryan Bader's wrestling and then actually get top position on Bader on the ground and then knock him out. And then Glover Teixeira is coming off of a knockout win over Rashad Evans. It's just a very impressive victory over, the former champ. So both of these guys have looked great in recent bouts. Obviously Johnson is just a massive knockout machine. He still, I believe, has the most knockouts in UFC welterweight history, and he hasn't fought in that division in about four and a half years. And looking at Teixeira, while, you know, he lost some of his luster after losing his title shot and then getting out grappled by Phil Davis, he has definitely bounced back in a big way with wins over Oben St. Preux, Patrick Cummins, and Rashad Evans recently. All of them were stoppages too. So I think we can kind of throw that out the window, that he's not motivated. He's not working hard anymore. And with Anthony Johnson, I mean, what more can you say? The guy, you know, knocked out Alexander Gustafsson. The guy knocked out Jimmy Manua, knocked out Ryan Bader. I mean, he is ferocious. And he dropped Daniel Cormier with his first punch when he got his title shot. So the guy has some of the most devastating hands in the entire UFC light heavyweight division. And Teixeira is going to have to be very, very careful here, because while Johnson has been finished almost every time it's been by submission, Teixeira is a lot more susceptible to a knockout, because Ryan Bader's hurt him. He's been stunned in other fights. And Anthony Johnson hits so damn hard that it's not going to take much from Johnson. If he clips Teixeira just right, I think he can put him out with one punch. So on the feet, while Teixeira is powerful and dangerous, I think Johnson is just absolutely nasty. So for Teixeira to hang in this, I think he's going to have to kind of weather that early storm and then work for takedown, to work that ground game, because that's really the only place that Johnson has been vulnerable. Obviously, Johnson, some can say he gasses, but for the most part, I think it's more because he just exerts so much energy early. Like, he gets a little wild and crazy trying to put his opponents away, and then he just runs out of steam. But when he's composed and measured, he can go all three rounds no problem, like in the Phil Davis fight. So I think this is Anthony Johnson's fight to lose. I mean, Glover Teixeira needs a takedown, and if he doesn't get it, he's going to be in big trouble, because Anthony Johnson has a good chin. I think he can stand toe-to-toe with Teixeira no problem and have a lot of confidence. And for the most part, if Teixeira does not get takedowns, does not start working for submissions, he's going to be in huge trouble at some point. Just with his age, with his durability concerns, I think this is definitely Anthony Johnson's fight to lose, so I'm going to pick him. I think Anthony Johnson wins by first or second round knockout. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a rematch between Nate Diaz, who is 20-10, and Conor McGregor, who is 19-3, and this will again take place in the welterweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened McGregor -130, the comeback on Diaz at even money, +100. So line is actually -130 right now, McGregor, and the comeback is Diaz at +110. Line margins have tightened up. This fight has been all over the place as far as betting goes. And I like a lot of pick 'em fights. I mean, you'll see the action kind of get swayed back and forth. I mean, both fighters getting some respect. Diaz actually flipped and was a favorite at one time. Then we're seeing action coming back in as we get closer to fight time on a McGregor. And that's not really surprising. I mean, that's one of the reasons that he did open as a favorite this time coming in, because he gets that much respect from obviously his fans, the betting community, the Irish supporters, everything you want to put in the equation here. But there is a lot of support coming back on Diaz as well. So the sports books in this spot, honestly, are probably going to get so much action on both guys that no matter what happens, I'm sure they're going to end up profiting. So I don't think it's a bad spot to be in. But really, I would like to lean with Diaz in this bout. Honestly, I know McGregor is going to be improved. He knows what he has to deal with Diaz now. I mean, a lot of strategy is going to be a little bit more patient, he said. I mean, they're going to have a game plan. His ground game's improved. Everything all around, his cardio. I'm expecting a better Conor McGregor to show up in this fight. And obviously, he was doing really well early on in the first fight. So he has the capabilities of scoring on Diaz, doing some damage on Diaz. We've seen it. And I mean, the guy's a very dangerous fighter. He's a gifted fighter. I mean, the guy has talent. He has got, a lot of people would like to say, I mean, he's got kind of a big mouth. He likes to talk a lot, but he backs everything up. I mean, he was, unfortunately for him, he wasn't able to do that with Diaz, but still, you cannot say that McGregor doesn't have the talent to back up what he says usually. He does, and he's proven that time and time again. So in this spot, though, I still think he's being a little bit stubborn here. At 170 pounds, I think Diaz is going to be too much for him. I think he should have probably taken his fight at 155 pounds, to be honest with you. But that, with all that being said, McGregor is going to have his fair share of success in this fight. I mean, he's going to land his punches. I just think as the fight progresses, it's still going to favor Diaz. Even if McGregor has the better cardio, or better cardio, I should say, than he did last fight, Diaz is still going to have overall the better cardio. And this is a 5-round fight. So if it's not round 2 this time, maybe it's round 3, maybe it's round 4. Eventually, I think Diaz is going to find the spot if he can hang on and not get clipped and knocked out, of course, and probably put McGregor away. So I do think that Diaz more than likely kind of repeats what he did last time and gets the fight to the ground. Regardless of McGregor's improvement on the ground, I don't think he's going to be able to even get close to Diaz as far as catching up his skill. No way. I know his camp is saying that stuff. That's just nonsense. I mean, Diaz is going to have an easy time with McGregor again on the ground if it does take place. So he doesn't want to do that. He wants to try to stand and bang and knock Diaz out. I think that's his really best path of victory. And I think he could possibly accomplish that. That's why it is a tight line as well. But with all that being said, Diaz had a full camp this time coming in. He knows that now he should be a little bit more confident. Even though McGregor was landing his shots, he was absorbing them. He was taking them. He don't want to do a lot of that same stuff, though. I mean, he was playing with fire there a little bit, but still, Diaz knows I can get this guy to the ground. Or if the fight, I should say, takes place on the ground, I have a huge advantage there. I could even strike with this guy. And I think if McGregor does come out with that plan of being a little bit more careful, trying to manage his gas a little bit better, that's a mistake, because you cannot let Diaz get comfortable and start setting up and working behind that jab. I think if Diaz, the more comfortable he gets early on, I mean, this is going to be trouble for McGregor as well. So as the fight progresses, I give the advantage to Diaz. If McGregor doesn't come out aggressive as he should, he's probably going to start getting picked apart, and I think that favors Diaz as well. Any way I look at it, I think Nate Diaz does probably come away with a win again in this fight. And I'm going to pick him to win, honestly. So there's going to be a lot of support again on both these guys. There's so much craziness that surrounds this fight. I wouldn't be totally shocked regardless of which way this went, but I still think overall Diaz is the better fighter at this point. And I think he's going to probably beat McGregor again.
The biggest issue for McGregor last time around was the fact that he was trying to knock Diaz's head off. And while he connected, Diaz could handle his power. Diaz got bloodied up. He got busted up, but he survived it. And then the second McGregor started to slow down, that's when Diaz settled in and really started to do his damage. And that's how, where Diaz thrives is, you know, keeping opponents at the end of his punches. And once Diaz settled in and got comfortable, McGregor was clueless. I know McGregor was starting to slow down a little bit, but I mean, it was silly almost how impressive Diaz's straight punches were against McGregor. Like, McGregor just had no idea how to deal with somebody who was keeping him at the end of his reach. And he was flustered and he started getting hurt from strikes. He started overcommitting again and eating big shots. And then Diaz by then was completely settled into the fight. And as Nick mentioned, Diaz has a big advantage in the ground game, and he said that, you know, he'll look to take the fight to the ground, but that's not what happened the last time. Diaz was lighting McGregor up on the feet, and McGregor took the fight to the ground. And then Diaz just easily swept him, rolled him over, got him in a choke, and lights out. You know, McGregor was forced to tap out. So, as Nick mentioned, McGregor's talking about, you know, improving his cardio and this and that. And that is a huge mistake. If McGregor's going to win, he needs to blitz Diaz. He needs to take him out. I mean, he won the title from Jose Aldo in less than 20 seconds. He needs to go out there and just completely destroy Diaz in one round. And that's how he's going to win. Nate Diaz is a bit of a slow starter. And if McGregor can go out there and just start connecting over and over again, and then just get in Diaz's face and then try to put him out, that's how you win. Because five-round fight, there is no way McGregor's going to be able to outlast Diaz here. Diaz is a cardio machine. He can keep up a high pace, high output for five rounds, no problem. And at some point, McGregor's going to get tired. I don't care how much he improved his cardio. So if he paces himself and slows down just because he's worried about gassing, then that's just going to give Nate Diaz an opportunity to settle in. And you just don't want that to happen. When Diaz settles in, that's when he starts dominating people like Donald Cerrone and Michael Johnson on the feet. So McGregor seriously is making a huge blunder if he slows down. He needs to go out there and start just launching bombs. I mean, he needs to land every one of them, but I mean, he needs to connect with the big left hand over and over again. And not just overhand lefts like he was throwing, big straight lefts too. He's definitely capable of it. So McGregor needs to get inside and land those shots, because if he doesn't, then Diaz settles in, the jabs start connecting, then the taunting starts happening, then McGregor gets flustered, maybe McGregor starts to slow down, and then repeat history. And I think with the way McGregor's talking, with the way McGregor's preparing, he's making a huge mistake. And Diaz actually gets a full training camp this time around. It's at 170 pounds again, which makes zero sense because they only did it last time because it was short notice. I think McGregor is biting off more than he can chew here, trying to prove too much. And I think Nate Diaz can pull this off. And I expect him to get probably a third round submission or maybe even TKO victory. So my pick is going to be Nate Diaz. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 202. Part 2 of the Premium Odds Cast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker Premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.